This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We begin hour number two. It is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross here at Circus Sports Fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in the land, Cleveland, Ohio. We got Mike Palm coming in this hour. So, Jensen, be ready, because Palm's pressing three. You know he's going to grill you on those questions. Rachel Dory is going to join us in number three, figure out what's going on in NHL land here with free agency upon us. And Kevin Franson is going to join us to kick out and round out the show today, talking all things Major League Baseball. But right now, it is a pleasure to welcome back to the program Kate Constable. Does a great job as a betting host and analyst at The Better Angle. Give her a follow, as we do, at Kate Constable on X. Joins us now in the Progressive Guest Line. Good morning, Kate. We got five games on the docket today for the WNBA. Have you already fired, or is this like you wake up, have the coffee, and start to really get those numbers?
I fired on a couple already, but the coffee, having woken up and had my first cup, another cup will be coming after I get off with you guys. I've kind of made a couple more decisions or angles that I like on some of these other games. So big slate today, a lot of opportunities to bet the W with teams coming off a little bit of an extra rest, having the Commissioner Cup being played. I mean, not necessarily like an all-star type break that they'll have in a little bit, but a couple extra days of rest. So I think a lot of these teams are going to be ready to go today.
Yep, I would agree. And Kate, the Lynx are a little bit dead to me after I felt like I got some of the greatest spread movement in my favor. I had them locked in at 6.5. They get upwards of 10.5. They lose by 15. I'm like, okay, you are on the potential ban list. But hey, listen, credit where it's due. The Fever came out. And they finally put together what looked like a complete game. Let's assess this matchup tonight here against the Aces. Aces a little short favorite here. I think the spread up to -4. Overall, your thoughts of this matchup and where it could end up?
Yeah, so the Fever winning the Commissioner Cup is a big deal in this matchup, because I don't know if you guys saw after on social media, the Fever were celebrating in the locker room. Mm-hmm. They were partying a little bit, having a couple brewskis, maybe shotgunning a few. And so you're now playing 2 days later. I'm not sure all those players went out and got like super drunk where they're hungover the next day. I'm sure they were somewhat responsible, but still, I mean, we talk about letdown spots a lot in other sports. This is a little bit of a letdown spot coming off of you just won on the road. You were 10.5 point underdogs. So now you're back at home facing an Aces team that is starting to play a little bit better. I'm not going to say that they're totally back to what we expected them to be prior to the start of the season, but they're starting to play better. So the Aces, even on the road here, this line tells me that Caitlin Clark is not going to be in the game, because if Clark was playing, I'm not sure the Fever would be this big of home dogs, if home dogs at all. So sure, you can win one game, a couple games without Caitlin Clark. You can kind of rile yourself up for that big game against the Lynx, but can you do that 2 days in a row when you're a little hungover or maybe just a little tired after that big win the other night? So I like the Aces here, -4.
Yeah, I just don't know what difference she would really make, though, okay, because she's only the 9th best guard in the WNBA, right?
Right.
Yeah. Right. So what's the line move that we would get with a Caitlin Clark playing? I mean, come on.
Wait, half a point for the 9th best guard, right?
Okay, what did you make of that, if anything at all? Like, again, more than likely she's not going to be able to go tonight. But when you see stuff like that, do you think that just it's more fuel to the fire for somebody like Caitlin Clark?
Oh, I mean, I think Caitlin Clark has the Michael Jordan mentality where I just take everything personally.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yes, that is most definitely fuel to the fire for Clark. And when she comes back, she'll probably use that to her advantage. I don't understand it, but the way I guess you could kind of justify it is that her numbers this season aren't as good as last year. She's missed time. She leads the league in turnovers. Her three-point shooting is down a little bit. So if you are looking at it specifically just the numbers, then yeah, maybe you could make that argument. I'm still not going to get there. She's not the 9th best guard by any means, but that could be what some people are thinking.
Yeah, and Kate, what I'm thinking too is our conversations in weeks past about the look-ahead lines and trying to capitalize on some movement. I've felt that I've done pretty well from the totals. And so Let's move to that Sparks and Liberty first game on the docket for tonight. I got them at under 170.5. It's now down to 168.5, but I think you're looking at a team total specifically for the Liberty. What's your handicap here in this matchup?
Yeah, I'm going to silo this just to the Liberty. They are a team that has struggled a lot lately. They've lost four of their last five, which is uncharacteristic of the best team in the league, or second best team, if you want to say that the Lynx are right now. And I just see them having a little bit of a bounce back. I think that small break was going to be good for them. They're getting Feinbach back. She was playing or had Eurobasket obligations, so she wasn't playing in these last couple of games. And having her three-point shooting back, she's shooting, like, putting up at least 6-7 threes per game, and the Sparks have one of the worst defenses in the league. They've had one of the worst defenses all season, allowing just under 89 points per game in their last five games, and two of their last three against the Chicago Sky, who are awful on offense, right? They just gave up 97 and 92. So I'm not sure that the Sparks are necessarily going to reach their team total, but I like the Liberty here at home. They have a five-game homestand coming up. This is just a good spot for their offense to get back on track. Their defense still might struggle a little without Jonquel Jones, their starting center. She's out, and that's kind of what's led to their descent over the last couple of games. But I like this spot coming off the rest, and I think their offense gets back on track with Feinbach back.
All right, Kate, we're going to talk about the last game on the board here, and it's the biggest spread, and it's also the lowest total. That's the Lynx against the Mystics. And Jensen, I don't know if you want to cover your ears, but again, the Lynx, big favorites in this one at 11.5 over the Sticks. But you've already got the better of the number, Jensen, on your play on the total. This number's come way down here from what you got at 159.5, Jensen?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 159.5, now 154.5. So we're in good shape. We think we're in good shape.
Right. Kate,
we think we are.
Is Jensen in good shape now, at least in that total already coming down 5 points?
I think you are in good shape, Jensen. I think we get a great defensive effort from the Lynx coming off of that loss. I mean, they talked a lot about how that game was just very uncharacteristic of them. And yes, they did have their worst offensive output of the season in that Commissioner's Cup game. But oftentimes when a team comes off of a bad loss like that, which, I mean, characteristic, that is a bad loss when you were 10.5 point favorites,
mm-hmm.
Their defense kind of locks up. And that's been an issue at times throughout the season. So I kind of almost like that they lost for this play here because they recalibrated, they regrouped in the locker room. And I actually like the Lynx to cover this number. I think the side is wrong here. These two teams played last week in D.C. Minnesota was a 7-point favorite without Nafisa Collier. Now they're back at home. They have Nafisa Collier on the floor now. Minnesota, again, coming off of that loss. So I just think that 11.5, and I know it opened a little bit higher. We're looking at 12.5 here at Circa, or I'm sorry, 12. I think that number should be almost 13.5. Mm. So I think there is some value on the Lynx in a bounce back spot against this Mystics, just based on how that number has changed from last week when they played in D.C.
I like that. And so let me give you kind of a would you rather here then, Kate, with the other couple of games here, Storm and Dream and Mercury and Wings here. So again, the common theme for me so far on this slate alone is just playing the totals. So we have a really tight one here with the Storm and the Dream, just a 2-point favorite for Seattle. I played the under 162 down to 160.5. But the Mercury and the Wings, okay? And I know this is something you talked about last couple of weeks you've been on with us about that blowout potential, and you just have to keep that in mind. I did play the total over 168.5. I know it's down to 167. I'll give you the floor on both those games. Your feeling on where we are, particularly with Mercury, Wings, and then also the Storm and the Dream.
I like your look on the Wings. You said you had the under in that one, correct?
I have the over in the Mercury Wings, and I think I may be in trouble here just knowing how the double-digit spread is and what you've said in the past about the blowout potential. We may not be able to get there considering that the Mercury could just be shooting the lights out.
That is my concern, especially because Arike Ngumbawale is out for the Wings tonight. So that's going to mean Paige Beckers has to carry a lot of that scoring load, and she's certainly capable of that. We've seen her put up quite a few big numbers, but you might need a little bit more scoring on the Wings side in order to get over that number. So that's all my only concern there, Jensen. Not saying that's a bad pick at all. The Storm and Dream, I don't know how to approach this game. I told you guys last time that I was on that the Dream were a little undervalued in the market, and I still think that a little bit, but they're without Ryan Howard tonight, and that's a big piece for the Dream here. So I've gone back and forth in making cases for the Storm to cover, for the Dream to cover. So the total in that one, I'm going to trust you, Jensen, and what you have on the under there. I'm going to tell you that you're going to be the expert on the total in that one, because I really just cannot get a read on it. The Storm, they can show up at times on the road. They can show up at times at home and then completely lay eggs other times. So those are two teams that, yes, I'm higher on the Dream than most, but I still kind of don't know how to approach those two teams fully.
Oh, we have about a minute to go here, Kate. I just wanted to ask you your thoughts on the expansion now. And we saw that Sophie Cunningham was very outspoken about some of these teams in specific. Detroit, she brought up. Cleveland, Detroit, and Philadelphia, they're going to go. They're going to expand this league to 18 games. What'd you make of this? And were you surprised by some of the pushback?
I was surprised a little bit by some of the pushback. But at the same time, I'm worried that the league is expanding too quickly.
Okay.
Because we have two teams coming within the next year. And then these three start. So we're going to have five teams over the next 5 years coming to the W. And I think I'm just worried about, not to say that the talent pool is bad by any means, but you get that stretch thin. And then all of a sudden, is it even more top heavy than it already is right now? Mm. And do you have teams? I mean, the Valkyries, they've been great. I'm not sure that's going to be the case for all of these expansion teams going forward. So that's my concern, is that it's just happening a little too quickly.
Yeah, right. Everybody just pace yourselves, right? We're growing, and it's growing at a good pace. We don't need to have this record expansion here. Maybe that's what the players are getting at as well. Kate, we appreciate it as always. Enjoy the W. We'll catch up again soon.
Thanks, guys.
There she is, Kate Constable. We'll give her a follow at that same handle. Kind enough to join us here on the Progressive Guest Line. When we come back, new coach, speaking of basketball, in the city that never sleeps. We'll discuss next here. It's Beeson by the Books.
You're tuned in to Beeson by the Books, right here on Beeson.
Enjoy the conversation with Kate Constable in the last segment. We're going to have Mike Palm in studio here to bring up Palm's Pressing 3. I always love our conversations with Mike here each and every Thursday. I'll give a shout out. General Mitchie Moss did tweet at us about the trophy house, asking for those seven players. And you knew our guy Kelly Bidwin coming up next with Gil on a numbers game. He already had our back, listed all seven guys. And right now, I'm trying to see if any of those seven are already out there on the board. I don't see those guys if they've teed off yet, but we'll try to keep you and give you updates as the show goes. Because again, Jensen, you've got a ticket over 30-1, correct, on all seven guys to make the cut.
Yeah, our esteemed producer Brandon Valesky and I just said, "Why not? Little blind tail. Let's see what can happen." And I think, you know, obviously we hit that. We're on house money for the rest of those guys having the outrights on them as well. But again, overarching theme for people just joining us. This is one of those tournaments where, you know, you don't have the 10-1s, the 12-1s that are just like, okay, it is, everyone is chasing that golfer or two. So I think it's going to be wide open. Can't wait to see how it plays out.
And we appreciate everybody watching and listening and getting those guys out there, the Trophy House 7 in action here at the John Deere Classic. But without further ado, hour number two, it's time for our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Knicks got their guy, Coach Tibbs. They showed him the door after getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. And then you go, well, if you're getting rid of Tibbs, you've got to have somebody in mind. It sounds like maybe they went through a bunch of different candidates. I don't know that Mike Brown was the guy that they had targeted all along. That is neither here nor there, because he will be in New York City as they hire the former two-time coach of the year. Mike Brown's going to take over. Of course, he was a championship as an assistant coach with Golden State, also in San Antonio back in the day here under Coach Pop. So he has been on winning teams here, Jensen. You know him well in the Cleveland days. What do you think people in Cleveland are saying about the hire in New York?
They don't care because, you know, this is a guy that is kind of, you know, been out of sight, out of mind for a while. Now, I can't remember if he's still on the Dan Gilbert payroll or not. We have a tendency here in Cleveland to want to pay head coaches that no longer coach for our team. years after they depart. Okay, so I guess the ultimate feel here is how does Mike Brown affect the current iteration, and what will his influence on the future roster construction look like? I think bottom line is you had a guy in Tibbs who, as was well documented, ran his starters out there for a lot of minutes. Sure. I think my initial thought, Dave, is how does Mike Brown adjust the rotation? How does he allow for and maybe a better semblance of the second unit off the bench? And how does he address allowing, you know, the Jalen Brunsons of the world, the Karl Anthony Towns of maybe taking a day or limiting that workload to be able to have them ready for what they hope is a long run? Listen, the East, I think you and I looked at him and said, can we bet the Cavs at plus 250? I don't think I can at the moment, albeit from what they have, they probably should be that team that's the top betting choice right now. But if you were to tell me that after the Desmond Bain move and everything else that's transpired, that the Magic would be the third betting choice behind the Knicks. I mean, again, I still think we need the rest of the offseason to kind of stretch its legs a little bit. Sure. And still, we know the ultimate domino is where does Giannis end up here. But the Knicks are that team where you got to where you were last year. How much pressure, Dave, is on Mike Brown in year one to get back there and be able to go even further? I don't know if I want any. They may be the same exercise as we talked about with the Lakers for people just joining us. I may wait to see what that relationship is like. Can they drift maybe to a 5-1? Can they drift a little bit longer? If so, that may be the time to strike.
Plus 285 is way too short. I'm right there with you. As the second betting choice to come out of the East, I cannot play that in good conscience today. And again, in a Lewis Ross administration, we are all about transparency, so I'll be very transparent. I like Mike Brown, personally. I like him a lot. We worked together in our Chicago days. He was our basketball analyst, and Mike and I have had so many conversations about ball. I love talking basketball with him. Now, would that, from a professional, from a betting perspective, does that change the way I look at the Knicks? No, it doesn't. Because, as you know, Tibbs, whatever you think of Tibbs, he did and was able to accomplish something they hadn't done in decades in New York City. And I'm with you. I do feel like Mike is walking into a situation where they're going to be looking at him and saying, you're the reason if something goes wrong, why it's going wrong. Because how else can it be? We got to the Eastern Conference Finals last year, and now you're coming in and it's not going working out as well. So I think, I don't want to say he's set up to fail necessarily in New York, because I do think he's relatable with players. I don't know why it ended the way it ended in Sacramento. Remember, they had a really good start. He was kind of turning that thing around there in Sacramento. Then it ended poorly, and he was run out of town there. So I don't know how long of a window. And look, coaches in the NBA, it just feels like you're not set up to have these long windows. They are shorter windows now, 3-4 year runs, and then they turn you over here. So Mike Brown, it might even be a shorter leash than that. We saw it in Milwaukee. Remember when Budenholzer, they win the title, and then you bring in some other guys like Griffin, and then all of a sudden you run them out. They don't even finish a year. So I'm not saying that's going to be the case here for Mike Brown, and I hope it's not personally, but we've seen recent examples of coaches coming in to high-profile teams coming off some of their winning ways, Milwaukee a title, New York getting to an Eastern Conference final, that if it doesn't go well, they're going to blame the coach. So I hope that's not the case here in New York, but you are getting some of that vibe that we've seen at other places as well. So wishing Coach Brown well, but you know in New York, if it doesn't go well, they're going to look at you as a scapegoat. What's going on with the Cardinals and their offense? They haven't scored a run, Jensen Lewis, against a National League team in 49 consecutive innings? Like, what? They just got swept in Pittsburgh, scored nary a run in those three losses, and now it looks like it's just an NL Central issue for the Cardinals. Look, they've been one of the feel-good stories so far in Major League Baseball. I don't think anybody saw them really competing, but now all of a sudden, you go 49 innings in your own division without scoring a run, Jensen, that's a problem.
It is, and I know the Vanderbilt degree tells me that you have to score to have a chance to win, and I did not have on my bingo card that, okay, yeah, Paul Skeens, probably.
Sure.
Mitch Keller has been going pretty well, and yesterday he and Sonny Gray trading, back and forth was really good. from the starting pitching side. This was one of the concerns that I had for St. Louis's staying power.
Mm-hmm.
Not only if they were to find their way into the October bracket in the National League side, but could they advance? And, you know, I think these are kinds of stretches here where you're like, all right, well, this is not an offense that is postseason worthy. Shout out to the Pirates, by the way. And if you had the foresight to roll over your money line wager starting at the beginning of this six game win streak, Dave, you'd be up a cool $7,000 on a $100 wager. So it's not the $160,000 for the Marlins and their eight game win streak, which ended yesterday with the Minnesota Twins winning. But yeah, this has been a remarkable run. And hey, don't look now. I'm not saying the Pirates are going to be a playoff team, but this is now what you ask these clubs to do, right? Is you play the games, you try and stick around. Don Kelly is going to get a lot of run for National League Manager of the Year if they continue this pace.
Yeah.
Listen, they're nine games out of a playoff spot. They're in no danger of running down the Chicago Cubs as they're 14 games back. But these are the things you try and really jump on to say, hey, the team's going in the right direction. They're five games over 500 at PNC Park, and a lot of that predicated off of this homestand. But you can see some of the pieces. I think they're going to be active at the trade. A lot of people going to call about Mitch Keller and Andrew Heaney. So, Cardinals, figure it out here. You're six games over 500, five games back in the division. Let's try and score against the senior circuit once or twice here.
We had not seen this from the Buccos, the Battling Bucks, to have consecutive shutouts three in a row here since 1976. So it's been a minute since that happened here. Cardinals, by the way, off today, but then they're going to play the Cubs in a weekend series. Would we look to an over? Like, can we say, all right, the Dew theory? Don't bet on the Dew theory, people. Never do that. But you know, people are going to go, oh, their offense, they're due. They've got to score runs. They didn't score one run in three games in Pittsburgh. It's going to come against the Cubs. There's a real danger in that, right?
Yeah, you have Colin Ray tomorrow. You have Jameson. By the way, that's on the 4th of July in Wrigley Field. Jameson Taillon on Saturday, and then Matthew Boyd, who's spun it pretty well on Sunday. Then they come back home against the Nats. Trevor Williams, I mean, again, they got to score.
Yeah.
They got to score.
But just at least break the curse against the Central before you play the Nats. So let's hope you can at least do that, St. Louis. By the way, check it out each and every morning, VSiN.com. Start off your day. Again, when you are a VSiN Pro subscriber, you would have access right now when you go to VSiN.com to that NFL betting guide. So it's there for you right now. Greg Peterson's got his baseball bets for you. The John Deere talking a lot about that. Wes Reynolds has got his picks for you. Tyler Shoemaker, WNBA, Zachary Cohen, Wimbledon still going on over there in the All England Club. Steve Mackinnon with his MLB analytics report. Right now, $175 covers you through the Super Bowl at VSiN.com/subscribe. Mike Palm in studio next.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here. Coming up in hour number three, Rachel Dorey is going to join us and talk all things NHL free agency. Kevin Franson is going to join the program as well to talk Major League Baseball. But right now, always a pleasure to have Mike Palm join us here in studio, VP of Ops here at Circa. Give him a follow on X at Mike Palm Circa. Mike, what are you going to be doing for the 4th of July? Do you guys get a break here, or is it going to be like, man, there's just no rest. You guys got to work.
This is one of the times I usually take off and take the kids and go somewhere and do something at least outdoorsy, right?
See Americana.
I have to tell you, I got a letter in the mail from Robert Vogel, who's become a friend through the show and coming to Circa, but he's a Notre Dame guy, used to be a school teacher. And so he sent me a letter about, I heard you mention about going back and maybe getting your law degree. And it was this whole thing of online places you could get it, and that he did some research for me, right? And he talked about he quit teaching when they stopped teaching in person and everything just became
virtual.
Everything became virtual and everything became electronic. And he said, encourage your kids to be ophthalmologists because they're going to be needed with everybody staring into an iPad all the time. But anyhow, we're going, last year we went to Yosemite. It was too damn hot. I mean, it was 98 in the daytime. We actually had to go up to Bryce Canyon to try to get out of the heat and change our campsite. But we're going to the south rim of the Grand Canyon this year. So we're leaving Friday and coming back Monday. So
fireworks intel?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Now we're done.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of fireworks, Mikey, and by the way, there's just something that has a ring to it about Mike Palm Esquire. That would be fantastic. The great Jeffrey Benson there posting, and I know this is not eligible in Nevada, Illinois, or Iowa, but we get the great Joey Chestnut coming back in one of the great July 4th traditions of the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. Any fun information you'd like to give to the listeners and the viewers about maybe a handicap in the hot dog eating contest?
You know, I'm not that smart, Jensen, but I can envision next July 4th you driving down to Franklin, Kentucky, and doing the show with Dave so you can get down, because it is available in Kentucky as well as Colorado, and there's a fair amount of money bet on it. I mean, my handicap is always try to figure out the weather, and the humidity is, to me, is the key thing.
Now, you're going to be sweating.
Yeah, it's very hard to eat a lot when it's...
Oh, my God.
It's those uncomfortable conditions, right? Low humidity and a breeze is always an advantage, but generally don't bet against the champs.
It's like Wrigley Field. We have to start looking at the wind and seeing if it's blowing out, if it's blowing in, or if you're getting a breeze. I mean, it isn't the most disgusting thing, new tradition we do in the United States, is it not? I don't know that I can really. I've watched them obviously in the past, and they're fun, I guess, to watch. But these are still real people that are shoving countless hot dogs down their throat at record times.
And the training that they do, right, to expand their stomachs and all of this sort of thing. I mean, is it more barbaric than slap? I don't know. By the way, we had that No Love Muniz on with Mitch and I Friday. Yeah. Wow, he was a tremendous guest on the show. The best question Mitch asked, and I don't know why I didn't ask this, we know you can't bet on the fights, but if you could, who would you bet on? And he gave us Pona Pau -120. It was an easy winner.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, that was great.
Yeah.
That was absolutely awesome.
You got to love the candid. You got to be candid about these things when you're put on the spot.
He was the most – I was listening, just driving around. I was listening to you and Mitch, Mikey, and he was the most composed guy. I think Mitch asked him, like, what are you going to do? And he's I'm just going to chill. And I'm like, dude, you're about to get hit in the face. I would have a little adrenaline kicking up there. Hey, I'll give you the floor on this. I know a lot's been talked about throughout the week, Gil and Kelly, and I know Gil's going to talk about it on his show. Just any thoughts on the implications here with the potential legislation coming down with, the taxes and everything that's going to potentially affect the gambling world here with what's going on in Washington, D.C.?
You know, I suggested, because I read Bill Spiros' tweet yesterday, that perhaps professional gamblers were exempt from this, that they could still deduct 100% as a business expense, but it appears that's not the case. Let's do simple math, right? I mean, if you have 40,000 in wins, and you would need to have 44,000 in losses not to have any tax liability, right? Because you can only take 90% on that. So you're losing that. It's not as if now you're paying 10% on every jackpot you hit. It's all at the end of the day. And I'm sure people will find creative ways to show losses 10% above their wins. Obviously, it's not a great thing. If you look at it in the offset from the slot tax threshold, going from 1,200 to 2,000. Now, we've tried to get it to 5,000 for years.
Yep.
7,500, but we're slowly. But 2,000 is this bill. You know, the great majority of slot jackpots that are taxable are between 1,200 and 1,500. And obviously, just think about how the numbers go. So there is an offset there in terms of tax liability, especially to slot players. But Dina Titus obviously has spoken up. I've reached out to Guy Reschenthaler, who's the Republican whip and the head of their gaming caucus in the House, workarounds that we could perhaps try to address this in this bill. But I know many people are very, very concerned about it.
Well, we talked about it with Illinois, what was going on there, and with some that we hear about the taxes being put on individual bets for different companies out there. Like, it always feels like it comes back to the gambling community. Is it just because, it's a gambling community, we can slap this stuff on them? And
send taxes.
Right.
And also they think the margin is so high in the casinos, right? Take a little bit more, they'll still be okay. They'll still be... The big concern for us, obviously, outside of that, is that it's just more and more things to push people back offshore.
Yeah.
And out of the regulated markets.
Yeah, it is. And that's the fact of the matter, right? That's going to happen when people feel like, man, I don't want to have this issue with Uncle Sam for my tax year each and every year. So I'll just do it and we don't have to worry about that. We were talking a little bit before we began our conversation here on the air about Wimbledon. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, back in my day, I do remember when it ended up around the 4th of July. And now this is week number one. What do you make of it from a betting perspective? Are you guys seeing handle on this? Yeah. Are people interested?
Tennis is a well-bet sport. And we take relative to other sports, we take a lot of money. And on all these 1,000-level events and up, right, which is the next tier, like they have these Masters in Cincinnati or like Indian Wells or Montreal. We take big money on these. It goes with the level of the match and the prize money, right? Correspondingly, the amount of bets. But tennis is a very well-bet sport, and it's heavily bet by sharp guys as well. And we're seeing a lot of action here, and it's certainly been chaotic on both sides with the seeds going down. But it's wildly entertaining. I mean, I can remember, I might be a little bit older than you, Dave, but Borg and McEnroe and breakfast at Wimbledon.
It's the best, right? Collins.
Yeah, we were kids. We were just kids then.
Mikey, can you imagine if we were to take the show on the road to the All England Club next year? Could you envision Dave in just a well-pressed white suit hosting the show with a little red, white, and blue pocket square for our very own Captain America? I think that would look great.
Yeah. Well, he'd be yelling, "Want it by land." I mean, that's my guy, Dave, right?
I mean, I love how they showed Tommy Fleetwood in his suit. I mean, these people, Mike, I didn't realize. I mean, we get it if you're when they have the royal, the queen's there and the king's going to be there. And we get that. But it's just the regular everyday fan that goes in there and they're dressed to the nines.
Yeah. And it's also in the 90 degrees.
And it's ridiculous.
As well, right?
Yeah. Would you want to go to a
compare
tennis
match
in a
suit? Compare that to the U.S. Open in August. You don't see too many people in suits there.
T-shirts and flip-flops. A little bit different clientele that we're going to get there. What do you see now for the betting guide is out, obviously, for the NFL. We're all very excited about that. Have you guys started to see more and more futures wagers start to come in now?
Oh, yes. I'll tell you the teams who are the movers. Overall, just for Super Bowl, Buffalo's been the most bet team. And by the way, is it minus 240 to win the East way cheap for them?
Yes.
It's just a bet that Josh Allen doesn't get hurt. You're laying 240 that Josh Allen doesn't get hurt. I had to parlay them with my other division winners. I don't like to lay 240, right? So I parlay them with three or four other division winners, which is a fun way to play, I think. Movement on teams. Here's some surprising things. The most bet team, and in terms of movement, to win the NFC West
is the Seahawks.
Is the Arizona Cardinals.
Whoa!
Okay.
Wow.
I was a little surprised by that. The most bet team in the AFC West
is the Broncos.
Yes, and I agree with that. I have them over 9.5 wins. Probably the team with the biggest moves in the win total and to win the conference is the Vikings by far. We opened them 25-1 to win the NFC. They're 9-1, and we had to move their win total from 8.5 to 9.5, the standard. We opened 8.5 over -20, and it got to -75, and then we had to go to 9.5, which I don't mind. But you have to lose 6 more games than you did last year, and I get McCarthy's a wild card, but Kevin O'Connell, according to my sources, is saying this is his most talented Vikings team he's had.
This sounds like a segment for
Goodness
Gil.
Gracious.
For Gil and Kelly. Are we sure? Are we sure J.J. McCarthy...
We get tweets.
...is ready to get 10 wins or more? When we come back, Jensen, get ready. I know you are. It might be the highest rated segment we do. It's going to be Palms Pressing 3. That is next when you come back with us right here. VSiN by the books. VSiN by the books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here on a Thursday, and each and every Thursday. That means we have Mike Palm join us in studio. And Jensen Lewis, you know what that means. It is time for Palms Pressing 3.
Pressing? Yes, I say it's pressing.
Pressing what? I'm pressing so fast.
This is Palms Pressing 3.
Now, my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
All right, here we go, Jensen. Throughout a 162-game grind, it seems those early afternoon getaway games don't always get the same level of intensity from the road teams who appear to be looking to get out of town as fast as possible. In these games, managers play their B lineups, where hitters seem to swing at everything, while the umps, needing to catch their commercial flights, are very accommodating of the desire of the road team to get the game over early by calling every borderline pitch a strike. Jensen, from your experience in the clubhouse, why do you think managers and players alike tend to take these getaway day games less seriously in the moment, only to look back at season's end and realize that dropping one or two of them might have cost their team a playoff spot?
Yeah, we're looking at you, Cincinnati Reds. What you did to us in March and April from a win total perspective, Dave Ross on line one to address his concerns. Okay, so it used to be, at least for me, Mikey, was there were certain destinations that on getaways, especially when you're leaving home, and we used to say this too, guys that were new dads could not wait to get on the road just because they could sleep. And and that, you know, kind of was a unifying force. Like, gosh, we can't wait to get out of here. You haven't slept all week. Like that was also part of the handicap. You're looking at player props, guys that have become new dads. You know, we have the whole daddy strength thing. Okay, you get that for about a week, and then look at it for the prevailing home stands of when you come home and you don't sleep. That might be a great time to play some unders there. But yeah, it's there are some things that are explainable. There's some that are not. There were destinations as far as road cities where guys couldn't wait to get there. So something to factor in for a handicap, but it is a real thing. No question about it.
All right, let me ask you guys very quickly here. Will robot umps get rid of this getaway day mentality that we call everything? You better be swinging. And, you know, now we have robot umps. You can't get those borderline strikes.
They will change a lot of things, not just on those games. Right.
Right.
And so I was always against it, and then I sat at Saratoga one year. We went out, and Tim Higgins was sitting next to me in the grandstand talking about how he had watched it in the minor leagues there in the East, and it was the greatest thing he'd ever seen. He, of course, who was a sure. famous basketball yeah. official. And I've watched it in action. I don't either do it or don't do it. The challenge thing and the wishy-washy, either go the robot or not. I mean, challenging pitches and all that, I think, is nonsense. Go fully to the robot or don't use it at all.
Jensen, your thoughts as a pitcher?
You just want to get the call right. I mean, there's been plenty of times and I've had runners in scoring position where I don't get a borderline call, Yankee Stadium, Fenway Park. And there are different elements of that where the challenge system, and I said, as long as it's the efficiency of what you see in tennis where it's seconds, then I'm fine with it. Get the call right.
There's a story John Kruk tells about they had a long game, like a 14-inning game the night before on Saturday night, and now they're playing a day game on Sunday, and it's like 102. And the managers go out to give the lineup cards to the captains. And Jensen will remember this. Frank Pulley.
Yeah.
Frank Pulley said, come a-swinging, boys. All right, speaking of pitchers, last night at Chavez Ravine, Jensen, Clayton Kershaw became the very first Dodger and only the 20th pitcher in Major League Baseball history to strike out 3,000 batters. Kershaw has thrown a no-hitter, won 214 games with a winning percentage just shy of 70%, has won 3 Cy Young Awards, finished top 5 in Cy Young voting 7 times, and has a career ERA of 2.51. 3 times he led the National League in ERA. 3 times he led the National League in strikeouts, and 3 times he's led the National League in wins. In fact, he won the pitching triple crown in 2011 and the National League MVP in 2014. Jensen, where do you rank Clayton Kershaw amongst starting pitchers in the last 30 years? And I'll tell you my answer after you give yours.
Yeah, he's up there. If not number one, he's got to be in the top 3 for me. Justin Verlander, I think, would be up there as well. Mad Max would have to be up there. Maybe for people that forget, Roy Halladay and Pedro Martinez, Randy Johnson, of course. I think you have to have DeGrom in there, even with the injury issues. Mad Bum is certainly someone that comes to mind. Yoan Santana for a while was as dominant as anybody in the game, and maybe a Curt Schilling I could throw in there as an honorable mention. But I would say Kershaw has to be at least in the top three just for what he's accomplished. And, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see. I told this to Dave, and I'll throw out to you, Mikey. We may have seen in our lifetime the last pitcher ever to achieve 3,000 strikeouts the way that starting pitchers are curtailed from their workload start in and start out now.
You know who I think's a candidate is Zach Wheeler. I don't know how long he'll pitch, but he's one guy that gives you the innings and the Ks every year. I have him ranked seventh. Jensen Clayton Kershaw is seventh in my book.
What do you got?
I have Roger Clemens first.
Okay.
Randy Johnson second. Pedro Martinez third. Greg Maddux fourth. Max Scherzer fifth.
Oof.
Roy Halladay sixth. And Kershaw seventh.
The heck of a list.
Yeah. I think I was going since 2001, but yeah, I mean, those, it could be a phenomenal argument about if you had to make a rotation to win a World Series amongst that 21st century group, who would you take? Just phenomenal.
It is amazing to think that Clemens was pitching in the 80s and then pitching in the 90s. I mean, just pitched forever. It is pretty amazing at that level. Doc Gooden, I would have loved to have seen what Doc could have been if he had stayed in New York and didn't have the off the field stuff.
Yeah. Halladay is really overlooked. I mean, Halladay was
a joy
to watch.
And did it in the postseason, too.
Did it in the postseason. Yeah. Did it in both leagues.
Yeah. Because Kershaw, I think there's a little stigma that the postseason success has hindered him a little bit.
Well, it's true.
Right?
How many six-runs leads can you blow to the Cardinals? Josh Towers, our former colleague on this network, spoke very glowingly about Roy Halladay as being one of his mentors in the game and somebody he really looked up to. Okay, Jensen, final of the three, unless we have more time. We are now into July, and the Major League Baseball trade deadline looms at the end of the month. Jensen, who are the top three or four pitchers you think will get moved at the deadline?
You know, Sandy Alcantara is the easy one just now that he's back and showing what we anticipated his form could be, and it's just a matter of what teams want to come up with package-wise to be able to get him. We were just talking about Mitch Keller and Andrew Heaney from Pittsburgh, a team that has shown signs, but obviously they won't compete this year. I asked Dave, he wants no part of Zach Gallen, and I think I can sign up for that. Merrill Kelly makes a lot of sense, just an expiring contract that a guy who really loves pitching in Arizona is a name that's out there. I think you are more intrigued by kind of the back-end bullpen guys too, and I'll throw Emmanuel Clase, Ryan Helsley. I mean, the Cardinals can't score against a National League team. That's going to be a problem moving forward. But I would say that we probably get a better idea of price tag once we get through the All-Star break. And that's usually when we start to see some of those markets surface of, hey, Yusei Kikuchi cost what was almost the equivalent of a number one starter at last year's deadline. Like, I can only imagine some of the exorbitant ass here from Peter Bendix down there in Miami and what they're going to want for Alcantara in Miami.
Because of this show and this segment, now when I watch guys like Zach Allen, I'll yell at the TV, fake ace! He's a fake ace! Mike Palm is easy. Like, I'm identifying these guys when I watch them in real time.
The bad thing for the D-backs is they had two fake aces this year.
Sure
with
did.
Burns as well. If I'm a team, Jensen, and I'm looking at Miami, I'm not looking to get Big Sandy. I'm looking at Edward Cabrera.
Oh.
Would the Marlins be willing to deal Cabrera?
Yep, they certainly would. and potentially the affordability is far more logical. It's a great name to throw out there. Just because Brandon Valesky is with us, I would be calling Minnesota about both Duran and Jax. Like, if you're looking for the quote-unquote cheaper option and the way to shorten games, like if you're Philadelphia right now, I would be calling Derek Falvey and saying, hey, what's it going to take to get one, if not both those guys? Because then with that rotation, the way they're going, it's a five-inning game. Those guys would be just in a really advantageous position for Topper there in Philadelphia.
Jacob Mizorowski proved he was human yesterday in New York. I thought the Brewers should have started him in game one and played him in a day game with in a less pressure spot. I know they're throwing up Peralta.
I know Bright Lights, baby.
Maybe trying to throw Peralta, but I thought throwing him in the first game of the doubleheader would have been a smoother landing spot for him.
I tend to agree. I thought that would have been a wiser move for them. By the way, since you're taking off with the family, did you pack already the sunscreen?
I did. I'm just finally, the peel is, I'm just the last stages of the Omaha peel right now.
Mike, enjoy the fourth with the fan.
Thanks,
that's
guys.
Awesome.
Happy fourth, fellas.
Always great to have Mike Palm in studio. Give him a follow again at Mike Palm Circa on X. We're going to talk some puck with Rachel Doherty to begin hour number three next year. It's VSiN by the Books.